南無妙法蓮華経、南無妙法蓮華経、南無妙法蓮華経。Hi, friends. I hope this finds you in good health and secure. We're going to finish chapter, well, actually, we're starting chapter 9 today. We finished chapter 8 last time. And this, I believe, will be the last of the chapters on predictions. In general, there'll be more. Then we enter the teachers of the right Dharma law. And we start to discover not only that we are all innately capable of enlightening ourselves, opening our Buddha eye, yes, but now what we can expect from that and the depth of its or the profundity of its actual occurrence. What does it mean to open the Buddha eye? What does it mean to our lives to access this new paradigm of understanding? So, chapter 9, we may be able to finish that in one video. It's not that long. Is titled The Prediction of Attainment of Perfect Enlightenment for Arhats, and specifically for Arhats, because for decades now, Shakyamuni has allowed his frustration with these students who don't seem to want to understand their capacity for enlightenment, and telling them, you're just never going to be enlightened. You're never going to attain Buddhahood because, well, basically, you simply don't want to. But, you know, that's now not how the three lesser vehicles talk about it. They're just stuck in traditions of ancient India and the idea of reincarnation and afterlife, which is all religious nonsense. But as much as Shakyamuni has spent decades teaching them about how their mind works, how life actually works, the truth of all phenomena. Heck, they even teach to others the teachings of emptiness, impermanence, attachment. I mean, how can they know, with all of that teaching and their excellence at teaching it, the repercussions of that knowledge? How can there be some special box of self that isn't empty, that isn't impermanent, that isn't... You're teaching it to others. Hello? They're just stubborn, right? So yeah, Shakyamuni is, you've scorched the seeds of Buddhahood. You'll never get there. However, starting with Shariputra, the foremost amongst the learned ones, and Shariputra knew all along something's not jiving here. And we read that very early on in the Lotus Sutra. Son of a gun, why was I so blocked? Well, we all do that, don't we? You don't even have to be specifically a Buddhist to do that. We do that as we grow up and experience the world. And we look back on our self, our memories of ourselves 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, and we think, holy my, where the heck was my head at thinking those thoughts that I had then? Right? We do it anyway. As our mind becomes more adept, experienced, knowledgeable, we challenge things like our epistemology, and it has to change. So why should it seem so odd that in Buddhism, we are learning to do a deep paradigm shift in the way that we think about our experience of life? Shouldn't come as in any great surprise. It's just, it's a little more difficult than learning math. In some ways, I don't mean to scare some of you off that are allergic to mathematics. I just mean the capacities of our minds always astounds us, does it not? And so you have a teacher here in Shakyamuni and in Nichiren who are promoting a direct path to that knowledge. How exciting is that? Now all that remains is for us to integrate it. All of us can open our Buddha eye. Namo myoho renge kyo dan. But do you understand? Do you perceive? Do you accept and understand what you are actualizing as it's happening? Are you utilizing it to the full? That takes time to understand. We are saha beings and largely controlled by our samsaric mind. So slowly, just like a myth, you can't just throw it away. You have to replace it. You have to move a new placeholder into that space of thinking and experience. And that new placeholder is your Buddha-ness, your Buddha-eye. So we need to keep building it, expanding it. Let it be more present in our lives, yeah? So for the arhats, who in large measure figured like the 5,000 or so that got up at the beginning of this sutra, this teaching, and said, we know it all. See you later. We'll catch you on the flip side. We out of here. Because they thought they knew it all. Of course, not all the arhats left. Many stayed. And they are learning, as per the past 8 chapters, holy crap, we have a lot more to learn. So now, Shakyamuni is going to speak to them directly. At that time, Ananda and Rahula reflected thus. We have thought to ourselves, if our future were only foretold, how happy we should be. Well, see, there's still... this is how stubborn our mind of... I'll say tradition, but you know what I'm talking about, is that self-perception we have. We lock into our self-perception, and we have a really hard time accepting that our self-perception is just a moment-to-moment construction. We tend to make our idea of self permanent. Well, it's just like anything else. Any other samsaric mental ideation. In the Saha world, we tend to want to see everything as it is. But nothing is like that. Nothing is like that. No thing is like that. If you claim to understand impermanence or emptiness, those Buddhist concepts, I mean, not just the words, the idea of something that is kind of laughable. Because everything is ising, it's being. Everything is a verb, right? You've heard me say this a million times. Nothing is static. Oh, look, that. Well, that word is fine, that, as long as you understand that is constantly being remade. Moment to moment to moment to moment. And every time it's remade, it's a little different. Maybe it's just decaying. Maybe it's changing color. We call it by many other things, like aging. Or dying, or maturing. I mean, how many words do we have to identify, change without admitting that the thing being changed is the thing itself? I mean, we do a lot of mental gymnastics to maintain ownership and possession of things. And Buddhism really doesn't tolerate that. It says, yeah, go ahead, name things, right? Nama rupa, name and form. But slowly but surely, if you incorporate in your mind the idea that nothing is, unless your definition of is that it never is, that it's constantly ising. But that's not what we do. So, if we could only have our future told to us, we'd be happy. Right, why should you do any work? Right? Arahats. So thereupon they rose from their seats, went before the Buddha, made reverence at his feet, and together spoke to the Buddha saying this. World-honored one, let us in this prediction also have a place. Let us know we can be Buddhas too. I've been saying this all along, Shakyamuni must be thinking. And he's already said it through 8 chapters. Yeah. But they still. And we know Shakyamuni is very compassionate. So if his children, his sons, his daughters, his bhikshus and bhikshunis, his come to him, even though they've been misleading themselves for decades, finally come to him and say, can you give us permission to do this? Of course he's going to feel like, well, at least they're asking. At least in their question, they perceive that this is attainable. I have to give him some credit for that. Okay. I mean, it's rather meaningless because it's just the truth, but to shift their saha minds into embracing this so that they work toward it, well, that's everything, isn't it? Because as I've said also many, many times, Buddhahood can't be transferred. It can't be given. Right? Each individual has to open their own Gohonzon mind, their Buddha eye. Right? You can't do it for your friends or relatives. I can't do it for you. Each individual must be on that path for their particular karmic freight train. So, okay. World honor one, let us in this prediction have a place. We have only the Tathagata in whom to trust. We are known to and acknowledged by all the worlds, including universal realms of influence, men, and Ashudas. Ananda is always your attendant. True. Protecting and keeping the treasury of the law, which in this case they're identifying as Shakyamuni rather than Tathagata, although it's a little fluid here, it's not that precise. And Rahula is the Buddha's son, for crying out loud. Well, we're all the Buddha's sons and daughters because the Buddha represents Tathagata in human form, in physical saha world, right? We understand that. If the Buddha sees fit to predict for us perfect enlightenment, Anuttara Samyak Sambalai, our desires will be fulfilled and the hopes of many will be satisfied. Oh, so you are ready to accept that that is your potential, even though you're asking me for permission. Thereupon, the 2,000 Sravaka disciples, who were under training and no longer under training, all rose from their seats, bared their right shoulders, went before the Buddha with one mind, folded their hands, and gazed upon the world-honored one, wishing, as Ananda and Rahula had wished, and stood there in line. Yes, we're all ready to accept and understand, is really what this should say. Then the Buddha addressed Ananda. Said, okay, Ananda, In a future world, you will become a Buddha with the title of Sovereign Universal King of Wisdom. Great as mountains and oceans, Tathagata. Worthy of praise, all-wise, perfectly enlightened in conduct, well-departed, understander of the world, peerless leader, controller, teacher of universal realms of influence and men, Buddha, world-honored one. He shall pay homage to 62 codas of Buddhas. These are basically saying how many people's lives he will touch and open, help them to open their Buddha eye. Protect and keep the treasury of the law. Keep this teaching. The treasury of the law is in the knowledge of the law and the practice of the law. The accepting and understanding of Tathagata, engine of life. Yes? And afterwards attain perfect enlightenment, instructing 20,000 myriad codas of bodhisattvas, like the sands of the Ganges, causing them to accomplish perfect enlightenment. His domain will be named Never Lowered Victorious Banner. Its land shall be pure with lapis lazuli for earth. His kalpa will be named World-Filling Wonderful Sound. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. That Buddha's lifetime will be immeasurable thousand myriad kodas of asamkaya kalpas, so that even if a man counts and calculates it for a thousand of myriads of kodas of immeasurable asamkaya kalpas, it will be impossible to know it. His influence, the influence of the teachings of Tathagata-ness, will go on through time, immeasurable time, because of its impact on the minds of those to whom they've awakened. This is what we're all trying to achieve, isn't it? What is sometimes called world peace, or Kozen Rufu, or depending on where you're from, just the simple, overwhelming balance of human minds on this planet being influenced by or inculcating and achieving the Buddha eye. Once there's a critical mass of sentient minds who understand and accept Buddha, how can there possibly arise violence, certainly at the scale we see it today? His right Dharma law will abide in his world twice his lifetime, and the counterfeit law again abide in his world double the time of the right Dharma law. Ananda, this Buddha, sovereign universal king of wisdom, great as mountains and oceans, will be extolled and his merits praised by universal unlimited thousand myriad kodas of Buddha Tathagatas like the sands of the Ganges. Then the world-honored one, desiring to proclaim this teaching over again, spoke thus in verse. You see, it's a teaching. It's not like a diploma he's handing Ananda. What he's displaying is this teaching that all of us are included in his statements here. He's addressing Ananda, but this isn't solely for the purpose of Ananda. I now declare among you monks that Ananda, keeper of the law, shall be shall pay homage to Buddhas and afterward accomplish perfect enlightenment. So, of course, as Nichiren would read this over and over again, he would understand that it is only by our bodhisattva behavior to help at least one other person that we then can accomplish our Anuttara Samyak Sambodaya. It's not something we can do alone. Because to do it alone is to know only our narrow path. But to do it with others is to expand our path to humanity itself. It's a much more immense experience of enlightenment. His title will be Wisdom Great as Mountains and Oceans, Sovereign Universal Buddha King. His domain will be pure, named Never Lowered Victorious Banner. He shall instruct bodhisattvas as sands of the Ganges River Ganges in number. That Buddha will have august powers, his fame filling the universe. No limits. His lifetime will be beyond calculation because of his compassion for the living. Does that mean he's going to live to thousands of years? No. The lifetime, again, understand time in Buddhism. The lifetime is his influence. Just like we do memorials for our deceased ancestors, it's not that they continue to exist, but their influence is a part of who we are, our karmic freight train, yes? In that respect, we can still speak to that influence. This is Buddhism. It's really not that complicated, but obviously 3,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, 1,000 years ago, this was pretty abstract. And so the tendency to make it kind of mystical, magical, well, but it's not. It's very reasonable. Just like the video I was watching earlier about the Great Lakes of North America, they didn't just appear. They're part of a process. The Great Laurentide Glacier that covered all of Canada, moving down and scraping away soil and rock with all of its grit and carried along rocks, just like huge sandpaper, making grooves in the earth, and then melting, creating lakes. I mean, everything is a process like this, including you and I. His lifetime will be beyond calculation because of his compassion of the living. His right dharma will be twice his lifetime, and his counterfeit semblance dharma teaching double that. Many as the sands of the Ganges, countless living creatures in that Buddha law shall cultivate the seed of the Buddha way. Now I have an annotation here. It may have come to mind by this point that the counterfeit or semblance dharma teaching always accompanies these predictions along with the true or right or priori dharma teaching, right? You've noticed that, and I've talked about it. What is the reason for this? It is that although this teaching of the Lotus Sutra, Myoho Renge Kyo, is the ultimate of teachings, it is also true that many are not ready to hear or accept this ultimate teachings as per the revelation of expedient devices, skillful means. Since these are predictions for the time of the Lotus teachings, we can see that several thousand years are yet to be incurred by these monks before the latter age of the decline of the law. Our age now, Mapo. Modern practitioners should note that this is not the time for this semblance teaching to be used. However, as Nichiren teaches, that our time of Mapo is the time when only the straightforward teaching of Myoho Renge Kyo will have any function or merit. That's an important note, because as you read these ancient teachings of Buddhism, you might get the impression that, oh, well, I'll just teach my friend how to become a good student. But ultimately, you're doing that person a disfavor. Understand that that's where they're enamored, and you may need to use the rhetoric of Shravaka in order to open a dialogue with them. But to Nichiren, what you should be doing is, even if you're using that dialogue of being a good student, the goal of their study should be not study, but Myoho Renge Kyo. If you love study, you love research, like I do, what you should be studying and researching is all the information you can amass on Myoho Renge Kyo. Put your stick in the sand of the ultimate practice and build your confidence, build your knowledge, build your practice, build your momentum toward that ultimate goal. Not the goal of being an excellent Slovaka. That's a lesser vehicle. Don't waste your time there. That may be where you're comfortable speaking, but the goal should always be the ultimate. Myoho Renge Kyo. This is what Nichiren's great lesson is, yes? And even Shakyamuni was saying this when he foretold the future after his extinction, yeah? Since these are predictions for the time of the Lotus Teachings, we can see that several thousand years, blah, 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 I already had that. Modern practitioners should note that this is not the time for the semblance teaching to be used. However, as Nichiren teaches, that our time of Mapo is the time when only the straightforward teaching of Myoho Renge Kyo will have any function or merit. Skillful means or expedient devices for our time begins with the Daimoku and ends with the Daimoku. What teaching is in the middle is a matter of discussion, dialogue, and compassion as we raise the mind of Bodhisattva in all of those we encounter. That's an important note, yes? I'll pick that up later. Thereupon, the 8,000 bodhisattvas in the assembly who had newly started on the road all reflected thus. We have not heard even senior bodhisattvas receive such predictions as these. What can be the cause of these sarvakas obtaining such decisions as these? Then the world-honored one, knowing that bodhisattvas were thinking in their minds, address them. It's just, if I give one son something, I have to give the daughter the same, right? Talk about parenting. Good sons and daughters, here he goes. I and Ananda, together under the Buddha firmament king, at the same time conceived the thought of perfect enlightenment. Been there all along. Ananda took constant pleasure in learning, being a Shravaka, while I was devoted to active progress. For this reason, I have already attained perfect enlightenment, while Ananda has been taking care of the a priori law, fundamental law of the engine of life, as he will take care of the law treasuries of future Buddhas, and instructing and bringing to perfection the host of bodhisattvas. Such was his original vow, and so he receives this prediction. Ananda, face to face with the Buddha, hearing his own prediction and the adornment of his domain and that his vow had been fulfilled, was filled with joy at obtaining such unprecedented news. Instantly, he remembered the law treasuries of unlimited thousand myriad kodas of Buddhas in the past and understood them without difficulty, as if he were now hearing them, recalling also his original vow. See the clarity of the mind? Suddenly, now that he's given permission, he allows himself to consider, oh, yes, this is the big aha moment that everyone I was holding this teaching for and teaching and exposing, they were accomplishing right before my eyes, and it never occurred to me that I could do the same thing. Jeez. Yeah? Then Ananda spoke thus in verse. The rare and world-honored one recalls to my mind the law of innumerable Buddhas in the past as if I were hearing it today. I now, having no more doubts, peacefully abide in the Buddha way. Tactfully will I serve in caring for the Buddha's law, reciting, writing it down, sharing it, copying it, so on and so forth, right? And then the Buddha addressed Rahula, his own son. In the world to come, you will be a Buddha entitled teacher on seven jeweled lotuses, Tathagata. Worthy of praise, all wise, perfectly enlightened in conduct, well departed, you know the rap. He shall pay homage to Buddha Tathagata's equal in number to the atoms of 10 worlds, always becoming the eldest son of those Buddhas, just as he is at present. The domain of this trader on seven jeweled lotuses, Buddha, will be splendidly adorned. The number of kalpas of his lifetime, the disciples converted by him, the right Dharma law, the counterfeit or semblance Dharma law, will be just the same as those of the sovereign universal king of wisdom, great as mountains and oceans. And of this Buddha, he will also become the eldest son. Afterward, he will attain perfect enlightenment. Thereupon, the world-honored one, desiring to proclaim his teaching over again, spoke thus in verse. When I was a royal prince, Rahula was my eldest son. Now that I have accomplished the Buddha way, he is the law heir, receiving the law. In worlds to come, seeing infinite kodas of Buddhas, to all he will be eldest son, and with all his mind seek the Buddha way. Of the hidden course of Rahula, only I am able to know. At present, as my eldest son, he is revealed to all. Infinite thousands of myriad kodas are his merits beyond calculation. Peacefully abiding in the Buddha law, he seeks the supreme way. At that time, the world-honored one looked upon the 2,000 men under training and no longer under training, gentle in mind, tranquil and calm, who were observing the Buddha with all their mind. The Buddha addressed Ananda, saying, "Do you see these 2,000 men under training and no longer under training?" "Yes, I see them." "Ananda, these men shall pay homage to Buddha Tathagata, innumerable as the atoms of 50 worlds, revere and honor them, and care for their treasuries of the law, and finally, in the same hour, in domains in every direction, each will become a Buddha. All will have the same name, namely, Jewel Sign Tathagata, worthy of praise, all wise, Buddha, Wilankana, blah, 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 blah. Their lifetimes will be one kalpa, and the splendor of their domains, their sravakas and bodhisattvas, their right Dharma law and counterfeit law, all will be equal." Then the world-honored one, desiring to proclaim this teaching over again, spoke thus in verse. And we'll finish with this. "These 2,000 Sravakas, who are now in my presence, I give to them the prediction that in the future they will become Buddhas. The Buddhas they revere will be numerous as the aforementioned atoms of the cosmos. After caring for their law treasuries, they will reach perfect and complete enlightenment. In domains in all directions, each will have the same title. Simultaneously sitting on the wisdom terrace, they shall prove the supreme wisdom. The name of all will be Jewel Sign." Is he running out of names, or it really doesn't matter, right? It's not about naming Namarupa. It's about mental cultivation. Knowing that Buddha-ness is an inherent part of living. Their domains and disciples, their right Dharma law, the counterfeit or semblance Dharma law, will all be equal without difference. All by transcendent powers shall everywhere save living beings, and their fame universally spread their influence. Right? They shall progress into actual nirvana of the Bodhisattva way. Now that's an important sentence to understand, because we've talked about nirvana a lot. And I've heard some people be confused about that and say, "Well, nirvana means that you're dead, right?" No, 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 no. Nirvana is a word encapsulating the detachment of samsara. But you're still in the saha world. Samsara isn't an actual thing either. Samsara is a construct of the mind. The mind constantly conjuring possessions, identification, selfness, ego. See, that's samsara. Saha is the mundane world. It's the physical world. We're not denying the existence of the physical world. We're just identifying that our mind plays this game with the physical world of making it, permanentizing it into something that can be owned or held or a complexity of identification that actually defines ourself. Also a thing we keep hanging on to. But all of that is mental conjuring. It's not real. You're real, I'm real, the stuff is real, but it's happening. It's a process in momentum. It's really not something you can possess as though you own it, unless you understand that what you own is the process of the entire cosmos happening. And if you're not observing it in its happening, in its momentum, then all you're observing are phantoms and ghosts created in your mind. This is, at first, this is a tough concept to grab, right? Because it sounds like Buddhism says everything is unreal. But that's not what Buddhism says at all. It just redefines what real is. Understand what is real and what is distraction, painful, emotional, all the stuff that you're investing in that isn't really there in the form you think it is why you have stress, anxiety, and pain. If you start understanding everything is a flow and you're in that flow and enjoy that as a reality, the stress just leaves. It has no purpose. It can't attach to anything. Does that make sense? Their domains and disciplines as disciples, their right Dharma law, counterfeit law, will all be equal without difference. All by transcendent powers shall everywhere save living beings and their fame, their influence, universally spreading. They shall progress into actual nirvana of the bodhisattva way. For him to say bodhisattva means a living being. Buddha is the concept of the process. A bodhisattva is somebody who knows that, experiencing it here in the Saha world, freed from samsara, living in this world, human being, sentient mind, with the knowledge, the experience, the experience of clarity, Buddha-ness, Tathagata, engine of life. Thereupon, the 2,000 men under training and no longer under training, hearing the Buddha's prediction, became ecstatic with joy and spoke thus in verse. World-honored one, bright lamp of wisdom, we, hearing his voice of prediction, are filled with joyfulness as if sprinkled with sweet dew. And that's it. That's how we end chapter 9. Now, Chapter 10, Teachers of the Right Dharma Law. Things get exciting for you and I. So far, we've been talking about all of these previous students, monks, and their experience of having to make this arduous paradigm shift, right, from Shravaka to Arhat, from Pratigabuddha, from all these other lesser practices with all of their inculcated and stubborn hanging on to traditions and things, now released. What are they going to do with this release? What are they going to do with this new opportunity? What does that new opportunity even look like? That's chapter 10. Thank you for being here. Thank you for liking and subscribing. It's very important to the propagation of these teachings. I just put up a new document on threefoldlotus.com right at the top on good versus evil friends. It's a topic that comes up often. I'm surprised I haven't put something up on the website previously. I'm sure I've talked about it before. But I have mentioned in several videos in the last year about propagation. How do we talk to people? And a lot of us in this Sangha specifically have come through some other organizations, big groups that are filled with all kinds of folklore and man and mishmash and I don't know. Nichiren and his teachings, his doctrine, have been used in so many weird ways in Japan specifically to suit particular agendas that aren't really about enlightenment or Shakyamuni's teachings for that matter. After some wars, there was a lot of nationalism and Nichiren talks a lot about straightening out Japan. And if you wanted to be a nationalist, you could use that and rhetoricize it into political polemics, right? Campaigns. But that's not Nichiren's goal. We live in super political times now. All kinds of propaganda. And it's unfortunate, but Nichiren's teachings, Shakyamuni's teachings, have been used to create huge membership organizations and profits and all kinds of things. And the bottom line is, I don't want to make this video about all those errors. Nichiren does a great job of that. But only to say that sometimes we make friendship connections along the way and we go a path and they may not. And instead of being able to communicate about our discoveries, they can become super strong obstacles. And Nichiren does talk about that quite a lot, right? Good friends versus evil friends. And sometimes the most evil friends actuating Dairaku Tenno Mao obstacles for our practice pull on our emotional strings and our thought of human connection to derail us. And you simply cannot let that happen. So, you have to guard against that. And as Nichiren would say, sometimes you have to move away from those people in order to help them. Because you can't help anyone until you reach your highest level of confidence. If you become unshakable in your practice, then no matter if it's your mother, daughter, son, brother, good friend, frat brother, whatever, they will be influenced by you ultimately, rather than you shaken by their vitriol. Oh, you're doing that wrong, you know, because they've been overwhelmed by misleading thoughts, teachings, groupthink, whatever. So the first thing is you. If you're not right with your practice, if you're not solid in what Nichiren is talking about, what Shakyamuni means, then you can be swayed. And the first thing to do to avoid that is to be more resolved. Not in rhetoric, in understanding. In accepting and understanding the depth of the teaching. People may claim that, but they're not really actualizing it. So I put up a little document. It's a tough call, you know, and maybe that's why I haven't put up anything in so long. But I think I nailed it down pretty good. I just want you to protect your own Buddha-ness. Yeah, that's what it's about. It's not about the politic. It's not about the doing it right. Doing it right means you're enlightened, that you're achieving your full potential. Are you? Be your own best cheerleader and worst critic, because you'll figure out the way for you. And that accomplishment is the best teacher, the best influence. Yes? So thank you for making that effort. I realize after decades of study and doing this practice, it is far easier to memorize stuff and learn stuff and develop a vocabulary than it is to actualize self-realization. So with all my encouragement, links in the description. If you want to go to threefoldlotus.com, if you want to access the free podcast, the bookstore, the mandala store, all of it. And of course, if you can help support this effort, this resource through financial donations, Patreon and PayPal, Namo Myoho Renge-kyo. Super grateful. Take care of yourselves, and I will definitely see you in the next one. Bye for now.